25th, 2013, Sussex County Council meeting to order. Mr. Lawson is absent today due to a death in the family. Approval of the agenda, we need to delete approval of minutes. And under Mr. Hickens' report, item number two, urban engineers, can be deleted. As under Joel Gibbons' report, item number two, Inland Bays Regional Wastewater Facility Phase 2B expansion can be deleted. Is that a motion?
Yes.
Motion, Mr. Wilson.
Second.
Second, Mrs. Deaver. To approve the agenda as amended. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Correspondence, Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you. We have one letter from Delaware Technical and Community College, and it is, dear Councilman Cole, Phillips, Vincent, and Wilson, thank you so much for your gift of $800 to support children this summer for the Kids on Campus program at Dell Tech. Because of you, several children will be able to participate in the week-long camp. Thank you for your support. Gratefully yours, Ileana M. Smith, Vice President, Campus Director. That is the only piece of correspondence.
Any correspondence from council?
I have some.
Mrs. Deaver.
I have three letters endorsing or asking for that dog ordinance, if we ever get it up for a hearing. Like those three different people. Mayor of Slaughter Beach, Amy Reed Parker, sent us an update on Prime Hook's marsh restoration. And that's about it.
Anything else from council?
Did I ask Mr. President, where are we with the dog ordinance? Is that something we'll be putting on an agenda soon?
I'm sure we will. Mr. Lawson, I think, was working on that, but obviously he's not here today. But yes, that's going to be on the future agenda.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, you know, we've been working with people that have problems with their drinking water, and as far as I know, the county's done everything possible. I'm going to turn in the letters from them, and at this point, I don't know what else to do for them except maybe contact the Attorney General. I just, you know, so I want that on the record.
Sure. Anything else? Okay, we'll move along. Discussion consideration of a county special event policy. Mr. Stewart. And this is basically, you're going to just bring us update on a policy we're already doing, which we need to adopt it, correct?
Yes, I'm going to give you a little bit of history about this.
Sure, no,
about
fine.
How we
Thank
came
you.
Here and what this policy is going to be about. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Council.
Good morning. Good
morning, audience. I have with me today also Joe Thomas, Director of the Emergency Operations Center, and Mr. Robin Murray, Division Manager of Operations for Sussex County, who have collaborated on this with Mr. Lawson, the County Administrator, and Everett Moore's excellent staff over at the County Attorney's Office. We're here today to present a proposed Sussex County Public Safety Services Special Event Administrative Procedure, AP number 39. This procedure is a tool that can be used by Sussex County EMS and Sussex County EOC to ensure that appropriate levels of public safety coverage are provided at special events. Special events typically stretch and often exceed the capabilities of scheduled public safety resources and require the deployment of additional personnel and equipment to provide adequate and acceptable coverage to ensure public safety. A number of variables will be considered and appropriate resources allocated as per the procedure. Give you some statistics. SCEM's coordinated response to approximately 150 special events annually, and that's a collaborative response with Joe's team at the EOC. The OSP also responded with a command bus to 7 events in 2012. More than half the special events that we cover were covered by SCEM's on-duty personnel. We estimate that 27 of those that we covered in 2012 would be billable. And examples would be Polar Bear Plunge, the Quest Fitness, Mud Run, Music Concerts, Rehoboth Beach Marathon, Punkin' Chunkin', and things like MMA fights. A number of events that we would expect that would not be billable would be the 4th of July fireworks, local community health fairs, Little League World Series, High School Prom Promises, the Nanticoke River Fest, and Apple Scrapple. If the events continue and we bill those that we have identified, we could recoup approximately 50% of our costs.
It would or would not be included?
Those last group
Apple Scrapple
would not be included.
Would not be included. Mm-hmm.
This procedure was first discussed and drafted in February of 2011, following a request by then-County Administrator Dave Baker to look into how we handle special events with particular attention to trying to recoup some of our costs for providing coverage. This also coincided, as you all know, with the 2009-2010 economic downturn. It was considered a way to offset some of the costs providing the extra coverage that we provide when requested. The other two counties, Kent and Newcastle, have similar policies already that are designed to recoup the cost of providing extra paramedic coverage when requested or needed to provide adequate and necessary public safety resources at special events. And Kent County also includes a command vehicle. The state of Delaware does not have currently a mass gathering policy or law that is applicable to the vast majority of special events in the state, particularly the smaller special events. Efforts at the state and county level to gain traction on a new mass gathering policy or law have failed to date to yield positive results. The consensus at the state level is that there are too many variables in play to write a law or regulation that would placate all the various stakeholders involved. So I have a motion. If there's like to discuss it before I make the motion.
Go ahead and make your motion, then we'll
be it moved Sussex County questions. Council approve Sussex County Public Safety Services Special Event Administrative Procedure AP number 39 as drafted and presented.
Okay. Entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver, and a second.
Second.
Second, Mr. Cole. Any questions on the motion?
Well,
Mr. Phillips.
Go ahead.
It is a little bit of a lengthy document, is it not? Three or four. How many pages is it? Four?
I believe it is four pages, yes.
Yeah, I think it's four pages.
Mm-hmm. And in this, you have detailed specific charges.
Yes, we have outlined charges for us.
Could you go over those, please?
The charges for the event, Sussex County EMS will be charging hourly for the event. The hourly rate will be $60 per hour per paramedic. We will be charging from the time the special events team reports to the station until the time they return to the station, and the special teams will arrive on site 1/2 hour prior to the event. The EOC will charge hourly an event for a dispatcher and the command unit coverage. The hourly rate is $30 per hour per dispatcher and $145 per hour for the command vehicle unit. And then charges are also applicable from the time the command unit is activated on site until it is deactivated. There will also be a 2-hour minimum for all special events. It does have some clauses in there so that in case the event is unable to be covered, we would not be charging them, or if we had charged them, we would only bill them for the hours we were actually there if we had to leave.
Okay.
Could you tell me again a couple of examples of events that would be covered under this?
The polar bear plunge. Quest Fitness Mud Run, music concerts, the Rehoboth Beach Marathon, Pumpkin Chunkin', and
Pumpkin Chunkin', you said it was not in it.
It would be billable, would yes. Be and
Apple
the MMA
Scrapple
fights.
Was not. Apple Scrapple, no?
No.
Okay, gotcha.
And why not? No, I mean, why would that?
Don't pick on us, that's why. No.
Apple Scrapple does not charge for admission. It's a one-day event.
Only if they charge.
Yeah. There's certain criteria that you have.
That's what it's based on?
There are certain criteria that you have to meet
to be included. It makes sense. I think it would be a great thing if we could.
Any more questions of counsel?
Yeah, I do. Mr. Phillips. I'm just a little concerned that we're
trying to recoup money we've been spent for taxpayer dollars.
I expect that from George Cole, not from you. I'm sorry, Sam. What events could you repeat, I'm sorry, that this applies to? It wouldn't apply to, say, a church function. Dagsboro Church of God oftentimes or used to have an annual 4th of July event that drew thousands of people. They had gospel music.
There's criteria. One of the things would be that you would be charging, it would be something where you would charge admission for the event.
Okay. How about if they charge for parking? Is that considered a charge that would require our services?
No, not to my knowledge. Not the way it's written, unless I'm missing something. Yeah.
First of all,
unless I'm missing something.
That's a good question. It's a good question.
Part of the misconception is that all events are going to be covered under this. And then anytime they request resources, it is considered a special event. And then we make a determination on whether this would be a billable event or not. So the fact that we have to put up additional resources or there's a mass gathering, it's automatically going to apply to this event. And as Bob said earlier, we do about 150 of those a year, of which we've identified about half that we could potentially get our costs back. The majority of those are the local 5K races, the 15K races, the half marathons, and the marathons, because they charge admission We would be able to recoup those costs that oftentimes the event organizers have asked us already, what is the charge for the paramedic service? Because they're charged in Kent County, Newcastle County, New Jersey, Ocean City, and we have said we don't have a charge yet. So they already anticipate, I would say 75% of the events that we would charge are those marathons, half marathons, and 5Ks. Part of the things that we take into consideration are profit status. Are they for-profit, non-profit? Do they charge admission? Is there a, what are the state police billing? What is this DelDOT billing? If other agencies are billing and recouping costs, then we would also like to have that ability to bill and recoup costs. If it is that July 4th fireworks, non-profit, community-oriented event, then obviously we would not be charging them. It's not our intent, and you know, Mr. Vincent was certainly a key player in giving us some guidance with this. It's not his intent to start charging all of these community-oriented events, nor is it our intent. But when there is a charge for admission, when there is a profit being made, we want to have the ability to turn around and recoup some of those.
It sounds like there's some subjectivity to it. It sounds like somebody in your office is going to be saying, well, you're making a profit over here, so we can charge you. This one over here, you know, they may not be making a profit, so you won't charge them. And that concerns me because, you know, there's always the chance that bias could come
into play. I think there's always going to be a degree of subjectivity with regards to whether we're able to cover the event with on-duty staff or whether we're available to cover it with off-duty staff. You know, if we're able to cover a 5K race at 7 o'clock and on a Sunday morning with staff that's already on duty, we may not need to charge them if the event is in Lewis or Rehoboth because we have a paramedic unit there. But if you relocate that same race to Milton or somewhere where we do not have an on-duty paramedic unit, then we may have to put up an additional resource, and in that case, we would have to bill. So there's always going to be some degree of subjectivity. Weather plays a factor into this. Whether or not they have alcohol, what is the size of the crowd that they're expecting?
Well, I think good law attempts to take out the subjectivity.
The law is actually, I believe, going to be in the ordinance that Mr. Lank is going to be dealing with. This is just allowing us as a department to have a policy in place that we can turn around and recoup some of those costs. This isn't the intent to have a law right now. The intent here is to have a policy in place so that when we go to the MMA fights and they're required by state law to have our presence there, we can recoup some of those costs in other events similar to that.
Okay. 5K comes to you and says, you know, we're going to have this event. You say you're making a profit and we're going to have to charge you $140 plus $60 an hour. It comes up to $600.
Yeah, the typical 5K race is not going to get the command
post. And they say, we don't have enough money to cover that. What do you then say?
Okay, so a typical 5K race
is not... Take 5K out. It could be any event.
Right, so in the case of a 5K race...
No. Any event that says we can't afford the $600. Are you basically...
Say we're not going to be there?
Yeah, well, can they say, okay, we don't want you?
Certainly they can.
Okay, so any event here
they have
in the
option to
has the
out.
Option to say we don't want you guys. Are there some that are required to have you?
I think they're on duty, Vance. They're on duty somewhere, but they're just not going to be at the event. Mm-hmm. So we always have coverage.
Right.
It's just that certain. It sounds to me like certain things the county's willing to subsidize, certain things we're not. Mm-hmm. And I can understand it because down at the beach, there's a race every week. And they're coming from all over the country, and they're prepared to pay this thing. But I would just caution you on this. If you're going to have a race in Milton and a race down, say, in Bethany, and you don't charge one in Milton but you charge one in Bethany, I think you need to be, as we say, even Steven with them. So certain things ought to pay no matter where they are because of the type of event. And then other things that aren't, say, community-wide are deemed to be open to everybody and free and all that stuff should be. Maybe subsidized, but we can't subsidize all this stuff because there's getting more and more of them all the time. So I think we're in the right direction. It's just maybe the standards ought to be maybe more equitable or
one of the
make sure they're equitable.
Yeah.
The first questions that we plan on asking and we have asked is, do you want a resource dedicated to your event?
Yeah, right.
If the answer is no, I'm fine with the on-duty staff just stopping by and being in the area, then we don't need to put up an extra unit. If they say we want or we're required by law to have a dedicated event or a unit at our event, well, then that changes things a little bit.
Means and now you we're sit looking there through the whole event. It means you sit there.
You had a guy
Units might be sitting there.
Like Mike Vincent on a bicycle in some bike race.
You need to follow him step by step.
Yeah, well, you need, so that would, yeah, that would be expensive.
Me too.
Amen.
Or Joe. And definitely Sam.
Mr. Phillips.
What are the events that are required by law to have you?
Right now, the only ones that we're aware of are the MMA fights by state of Delaware law. Most of the events, their insurance policy requires a... It is the kickboxing, the fighting, the mixed martial arts events.
Mixed martial arts, right. Got it.
They came initially to Sussex County because they didn't, they were not charged for paramedic service. That was the initial impromptu to bring them to Sussex. When we first started talking with those types of organizers, they said, well, in Kent and Newcastle, we have to pay for paramedics. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to come to Sussex County. We have told them from day one, because this has just happened in the last 2 years, that there will come a time mm-hmm. where we will bill for those services, and they're certainly understanding and accepting of that.
Don't ambulances now, Mike, don't they try to bill for services, the fire companies, when they...
If they transport somebody.
Right, years ago, they try. I mean, so sure. There's a cost to all this stuff, and it's just... I just think, Vance, unless you're concerned about...
No, the voluntary nature that he just described for this program makes it fine for me. There are no other organization or events that are going to be forced to pay this other than MMA, is what you said. So I'm good.
And that was an example. There will be other events. Uh-huh. If we get into a situation where they look at us and tell us they can't afford to pay from us, then we're going to seek guidance from the county administrator, from the director, from other people in terms of that.
No, you just said that the only ones required...
Required by law, right now, that I am aware of.
So if a 5K or a Punkin' Chunkin' or a 4th of July event doesn't ask, then they don't have anything to worry about as far as paying an upfront fee, right?
Okay, so many of their insurance policies require medical staff on site.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of medical staff is pretty widely
accepted.
I'm going
beyond the law into insurance policies as a reason why you may have to be there. These are the things,
correct.
Mr.
So,
President, that I wanted to kind of at least have on the table.
No, that's fine, yeah. That's fine.
So you're saying not only by law, but also by insurance policies,
if
certain events may have to have
medical staff, not paramedics, staff. Medical staff.
Medical
so
staff.
That medical staff may be a volunteer BLS ambulance. That medical staff may be partnering with a local community hospital, and they put a first aid site on site. Either way, we are typically notified and asked if we can be there. We will work with the hospital. If the hospital is going to do a first aid station, we'll obviously work with the fire companies if they're going to have a BLS unit. However, most of the time with the fire companies, their BLS unit's also available for other calls in their district. Very seldom, especially at the beach, when you're talking every single weekend there being a 5K race, do they put up an extra unit just to cover the 5K race? So, again, at that point, it comes back to the event organizer. Are you okay with us just standing by, and then if we have another call, we go? Or do you want a unit dedicated to that event? And I was informed that I need to introduce myself, just for the record. So, Robbie Murray with Sussex County EMS.
if someone comes to you 3 weeks ahead of their event, they slipped their mind or they didn't realize it, it says it has to be at least 30 days. Are they pretty much out of luck at that point?
We're going to do everything we can to get staffing, but we can't make a guarantee.
Okay, so that number is flexible as well.
Do off-duty off-duty paramedics have the ability to go and work these events, and how do they get reimbursed from the county?
Using county equipment?
They become on-duty paramedics when they work
just
for us.
Just put them on duty, okay.
Right. In Newcastle County and in Kent County, they do have the option to opt out if their insurance company allows of having paramedic coverage, as long as they have some sort of BLS coverage. And in some cases in Newcastle County, I know Larry Tan, Chief Tan, does not deploy to some special events because they use BLS a lot, don't want the paramedics on scene. However, one of the things that you have to look at in a large-scale event where they don't use ALS is the liability. if something happens on scene and an elected official drops and somebody mm-hmm. can't save them because mm-hmm. nobody wanted to have a paramedic on scene, it's not going to play well in the press. Mm-hmm. But they do have the option to opt out in Kent and Newcastle County in their policies, which we have mm-hmm. mirrored in our policy. Mm-hmm. However, most of the events want us there. It's not the problem.
Well, the races down the beach, you'll see the fire police or volunteer firemen at streets and, mm-hmm. and volunteers also. And then you'll see the state police mm-hmm. and obviously paramedics many times on bicycles, I think sometimes you. Yes. But I'm saying it would be not right, I don't think, if an event comes to the area and they can afford, you know, to pay all these other people. And then, oh, we can't pay you. You know, I think they plan ahead on these mm-hmm. These groups and these events that are used to going to different locations in different communities. So I think there's preparation there. Now, we may find a little local event, but it'll probably fall into the category of, you know, open to the public and this and that and everything else. But anyway, I don't see anything wrong with it. I think it works, and I think we need to get on board.
Well, one of the intentions when this whole thing started was the fact that if there are places that require paramedics and they are a for-profit and they mm-hmm. are charging, mm-hmm. Why should we provide them paramedic service out of county tax dollars?
Exactly.
And that's what's been happening to date, correct?
Yes.
I mean, people work overtime, they get paid by the county and they yeah. whatever, mm-hmm. and we charge nobody.
Yeah, and they just sit there.
And this gives the opportunity to have that discussion. They certainly can opt out. They can do a number of things, but I mean, that just was a thought anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Wilson?
If the fire company comes and they bring their EMTs,
mm-hmm.
can they put those fellows in the ambulance or person in the ambulance without the paramedics have to be there?
Absolutely.
Sure.
They can.
Sure.
Yeah, if the fire companies are on site, then, you know, they're going to take care of the patient, you know, to the level of their care.
The reason I asked that, I was too.
They can hear my.
The reason I asked that because I was to an accident one time, and the I said, "Why aren't you loading this person up? We're waiting for the paramedics to get here." In fact, they were only about 3 miles from Seaver Hospital, and they waited longer for the paramedics to get there, and they could have been in the hospital. So I was just wondering if that policy was still in effect.
It would be inappropriate for me to comment because there are so many variables on every single call, so many things taken into consideration, you know, whether or not the people you were talking to were EMTs, whether the EMTs are with a more critical patient. There's just so many variables that could play into that. I mean, we certainly have an excellent BLS community and fire service here, one of which I've been a part of. I know Mr. Vincent's been a part of for a number of years, and you know, we work together extremely well, and we're going to continue to work together extremely well. This policy will have no impact on that.
Who is our special operations coordinator?
That's Eric Kuvenin through Sussex County EMS.
Eric?
Kuvenin, yep.
So he'll be the one making the call on this.
He in conjunction with myself and Director Stewart.
What? It doesn't mention you two in here, does it? Or I guess maybe it does, Mr. Stewart. Except it does say special operations coordinator will make the determination.
Yep.
Based on the public. So it sounds like Eric is the man.
He is. Okay. And if he has questions or, you know, if it's one of those borderline where we're not quite sure, then he's obviously going to look to his bosses for guidance as well.
How much do you anticipate this will bring in the first year?
The estimation is somewhere around $20,000.
Okay. All done.
And more questions of council?
No, I just want to say it's a long time coming. I'm happy to see this policy develop.
Mr. Wilson.
I sometimes, listening to you, I'm wondering, what is nonprofit? How are we going to determine that? Because, well, take, for instance, the Pumpkin Chunkers. They say they're a nonprofit because they give everything away. That's their answer if you should talk to them. So they say they're a nonprofit, but yet they take in oodles of money to pay to these Red Cross or whatever.
Right.
And so that would be a question of if they said they're really a profit at the end of the day. See?
So the profit or nonprofit status is just one of the criteria that we use. And it's actually not the first criteria that we use. The first criteria that we use is, do you charge admission or is it free to the public? And then once we go from there, we start taking in other things into consideration, such as how many days is the event? How many people are you expecting to attend? What is your profit or nonprofit status? So there are a number of factors that are taken into consideration when making a decision on whether we're going to charge or not charge. The profit status is just one of them. Probably the most important one is charge for admission.
But, well, if I look at that in another way, I would say you should, if they can't pay you, then you say, well, you better charge admission because we have a charge. And if you have to charge $1 a car, 5 cents a car, to pay for your service, somebody's got to pay for this. If you don't collect it at the gate, the taxpayers will pick this up, who had no part of this event.
Correct.
So, and then it's not very fair to those, definitely, that didn't come.
I think you have to look at the event. For example, last year, the Seaford Fire Company held an event called Touch a Truck, with the proceeds going to purchase a Lucas device to assist in mechanical compressions for cardiac arrest patients. They asked for a $5 donation at the door for everyone who attended. So technically there was a charge for admission or an expectation for a charge for admission, but yet the proceeds went back into the community to the fire service and helped support a Lucas device purchase to help save cardiac arrest patients. So you really need to start taking into consideration what are the profits, if there is a profit. What is the charge for admission going to? Are they charging, is DelDOT charging and recouping costs? Are the Delaware State Police charging and recouping costs? Are local municipal police agencies recouping costs? If those agencies are recouping costs, then our feeling is we should be there as well.
But actually, if we come to, if you go to an event and you set up camp, that means we've got to hire someone else. Are you hired specially that day, and that total cost comes to the county, correct?
Today it does, yes.
See, now, particularly in the state police, I mean, they're out there directing traffic. They're not exactly have to be there that whole day. They could move around.
They're also there for security.
Sure.
At a lot of the events.
Oh, if they're on their grounds, but I'm talking about on highway. They even pay for the people, the policemen that's out on the highways that's coming in and way up the road sometimes. I see them working that event.
Yes.
Anyway, I think we need to head that direction. We need to start charging somewhere along the line.
Thank you.
It's not fair to charge those that don't go.
Any more questions of council? And that will take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you guys for all
your
hard work.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I certainly need to, I was teasing a while ago, I just didn't place to do that. Mr. Phillips, I should have made my comment. I apologize for that. That was not something I should have been doing.
Very much out of character.
You're correct. next thing we have is the discussion and possible introduction of proposed ordinance regarding the zoning for a special event. Mr. Moore, I think you have the draft. If you would read the short title and someone can introduce that, we can.
Yes, it's an ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Articles 4, 6, 10, 11. 11A and 12 of the Code of Sussex County by deleting the conditional use language for circus and carnival grounds, amusement parks, or midways, inserting a broader definition of special events to be defined as conditional uses in AR1 and AR2 agricultural residential districts, GR general residential district, B1 neighborhood business district, C1 general commercial district, CR1 Commercial Residential District, and M Marine District, and to subject all special events, regardless of duration, to the Sussex County Special Event Policy.
Mm-hmm. Someone can introduce that? Mr. Wilson introduced it. Thank you, sir.
Second.
Thank you, Sam.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was just an introduction.
Just an introduction, yeah.
Well.
Just an introduction. Next is the Administrator's Report. Mrs. Griffith, you can read that, please, for us. We'd appreciate it.
Yes. In Mr. Lawson's absence, I've been asked to read this. There's 5 items. The first one is the Advisory Committee on Aging and Adults with Physical Disabilities for Sussex County will hold a special planning meeting on Wednesday, June 26th at 10 a.m. at the Easter Seals Building, DuPont Boulevard in Georgetown. During the meeting, the committee will continue discussion of its upcoming conference. Number 2, DelDOT 2014 to 2019 Capital Transportation Program. Sussex County invites the public to offer suggestions for the upcoming 2014 to 2019 Capital Transportation Program request. which the County Council will submit to the Delaware Department of Transportation in early September. Residents and property owners with ideas for improving local roads, pedestrian walkways, public transportation, and other related infrastructure and services can go onto the county's website to submit their suggestions. Please visit www.sussexcountyde.gov and click the Transportation Ideas link on the right side of the main page to fill out a suggestion form as well as to view last year's county request. Submissions will be accepted now through July 26. Administration will review all suggestions and then compile a draft report for County Council's consideration in late August before submitting it to DLDOT in September. Number three, project receiving substantial completion. Per the attached Engineering Department fact sheet, Breakwater Estates Phase 4 reached substantial completion effective June 17. Number four, summer holidays. The Sussex County Council will not meet on July 2nd, preceding the July 4th holiday. A summer holiday for the County Council will also occur on July 9th. The next scheduled meeting of the County Council will take place on July 16th. County offices will be closed July 4th for the Independence Day holiday. And number five, John Edwin James. It is with sadness we inform you that John Edwin James, county pensioner, passed away on June 22nd. Mr. James worked for Sussex County from October 1984 until his retirement in November 2011. He retired from Engineering Utility Permits Division, where he worked as a Permit Technician 1. We would like to express our condolences to the James family.
Mm-hmm. Just now retired in 11.
Does his son work for us?
I have a question.
Yes,
about
that's
some
Jeff
of that.
James.
Is yeah, yes.
Oh, yeah. I have a question David. About some of that. I know we talked to DLDOT, and we encourage people to tell DLDOT what we think the needs are, and we have for a month to do that, and it's on the website. I think it all goes up in the cloud when we do that, because I hear now that the Route 24 Plantation Road intersection, that money's now gone upstate. I want to know how much goes upstate, how much goes to Sussex County for roads. Is there a way to find out? I'm not happy about that. I just want to know.
I guess we could ask...
Schwarzkopf, you know?
Yeah. Well, we could ask Mr. Lawson when he comes back to contact DLDOT and ask that. Yeah,
yes.
I'm sure it's public information somewhere.
I had talked to Representative Short, and he said he would get it for me. I need to remind either him or someone to get that report. I want to know where it's going. I have a feeling that we're short. We're cut short.
Could I suggest maybe Mr. Godwin could look into that after the 30th? He's going to need
sure.
for something to do.
Yeah. Anything else from council?
Yeah.
Mr. Godwin, you're now up. Legislative update. And if you would follow up with that, Mr. Fultz's request about after June 30th, the things kind of settled down from DLDOT, what money is allocated down in Sussex County.
Mr. President, it was probably 3 years ago I did a financial analysis based on a request from County Council, and I have some of those figures, but they're old figures. I think what you're asking, if I heard you correctly, is you'd like to know if monies that were allocated for a project here got moved. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I'd love to know that. I'd also love to know how we stack up compared to the other three counties.
That's relatively ready available. The issue of money being moved would take a little longer to investigate that.
Tell us how that works.
Yeah, I'd love to know.
Who makes those decisions? Is it the legislators up there in Dover sitting around?
Mm-hmm. They don't get involved in that unless there's some real extenuating circumstances, and they want to make some major change. But that's not very often that I'm aware of.
It normally happens within the DLDOT
right.
organization.
Right.
Their regulatory powers or something.
There are a number of factors that are figured into improvement decisions. One of the terms you'll hear used frequently is warrants. DLDOT and the Delaware State Police will assemble a list of warrants, which usually means problems, accidents, deaths, those kinds of things. So the intersection will need a certain number of warrants. It'll have to have a safety review based on federal standards.
It was planned. It's already on the books.
Well, then it should be easy to track. I should be able to track that for you pretty easily then. I will get on that. I will do that in the coming month.
Sure.
I will also tell you that Todd Lawson had asked me to shepherd the dog barking ordinance, which I'll be working on that again. That'll be another issue to work on in the coming month.
Make sure you use a leash. You take those little plastic bags with you.
Right. And rubber gloves. Rubber gloves.
You get the best.
A lot of people don't wear rubber gloves, but just.
Let's leave update, Mr. Lawson, if you would. I mean, Mr.
Yes,
Godwin, if you
would. I will.
A little broom and a little dustpan.
Right. We have the draft ordinance from a couple of years ago. That I think we'll probably start with that and then try to customize it based on the comments you gave us a meeting or two back.
Mm-hmm. I got a letter from a gentleman who lives in Sandy Bray. He wants it all over noise ordinance. I think that's pushing it. And his letter is 18 pages. I'm not gonna print it and bring it in, but maybe the county could do that.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I believe in my order, I've been asked to draft a dog barking ordinance, not a noise in general
right.
ordinance, correct?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
But he seems to think DNREC has an ordinance that it could take care of that of the general, but I don't think that's practical.
Well, you have copies of Newcastle County and Kent County's noise right. ordinances now. Both of those are relatively comprehensive. I'm going to try to focus it down just on barking
sure.
dogs.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dogs.
Mr. President, members of Council, I will attempt to review with you the legislative issues that we're watching most currently. I also want to remind you before I start that this is the final week of the first half of the 147th General Assembly. They'll meet today, tomorrow, Thursday, and they'll also meet Sunday through the night into Monday morning. Any bills that are not finished by the time they drop the gavel July 1st are still alive to be considered and carried on with the coming January, because a General Assembly is a two-year period of time. So bills that we don't see concluded at this point will still be alive to work on next year. As I go through our list of bills that we're watching, I want to point that House Bill 27, the tax interceptor bill, is still in the Senate Finance Committee. One thing that distresses me some is that committees normally meet on Wednesdays, and this happened last year as well. Tomorrow is the last Wednesday of the session, and both chambers have canceled all of their committee meetings. Now, I don't know if they'll stick with that schedule or not, but it makes it very difficult if you have a bill that you need to get through committee if the committee is not going to meet. What it will mean is we'll have to take the bills around to committee members and individually have them sign off. That's quite a task. But I do know that this bill, House Bill 27, has been listed on the must-have list from the House of Representatives in the Senate chamber. So I'm expecting to see the bill acted on sometime before they adjourn Sunday evening, or Monday morning, actually. House Bill 44, which is the flag bill, passed the House with an amendment. And it went to the Senate and gained another amendment, which means now it has to go back to the House and get that Senate amendment adopted. But I can tell you that bill is on the House agenda for today. So I believe it will probably be dealt with today or tomorrow. The next bill that you may have an interest in is the House Bill 150, the raw milk bill. It's on today's House agenda as well. So I'm expecting to see it dealt with before the end of the session. As we move down our list, another bill that I wanted to bring your attention to, I gave you a note in your report on Friday, House Bill 95, which has an amendment. The second amendment that's been offered and adopted with this bill essentially rewrote the bill. So I went through both the bill and the amendment in great detail to see if they had changed the intent of the code at all in this amendment. I cannot define for you that anything has changed. I will give you highlights of what the amendment has done to the bill. This is the bill that will allow the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control to impose environmental liens on real property. We've discussed this at length, but I wanted to just run through a list of a summary, if I can, with you as to how the amendment has changed the bill. First of all, it still has the authority to collect all costs that were covered by the state in a property that has some sort of a pollution violation. Permanently, the days of notice have been changed through the amendment from 21 to 30 days, which was an issue we wanted to see. This lien, if it's imposed, still will go in order as to chronology with all the other liens against the property. We had concern about that, if you remember, in the early discussion, so that hasn't changed. The property owner now has the opportunity to seek relief from the lien through the Chancery Court prior to the lien being adopted. That's new. So it gives the public and the property owner a little more control, a little more influence in how this lien would be applied to their property.
How long would something like that take? I mean, we're going to go to court and look at time, right?
Well, the bill just says that the property owner can go to the Court of Chancery for relief. There's no particular time in there.
I believe it
didn't mention the 30 days notice. I think that the way this works is the Department of Natural Resources will give you a 30 days notice that they're going to apply the lien on your property.
Right.
You might be able to intercept that if you can get into the Court of Chancery prior to that. But it didn't say that in those words that I just gave you. It implied that through the verbiage.
I think that's a way to dodge it. I'm concerned about that.
Is there an appeal process?
Yes. Okay. I'm going to get to that. The secretary must validate his lien amount with documents on which the lien was based. So the secretary cannot just arbitrarily ask for a $3 million lien when, in fact, he doesn't have justification. He'll have to have documented evidence as to what it's going to cost to clean up the site.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's new. Mm-hmm. The secretary may pursue value from other properties owned by the same person, but only through the Court of Chancery. So the amendment made that permanent in the law, in the bill. There's a new provision that says that if you get your 30-day notice in the mail that says that the state is going to lien against your property for, let's say, $500,000, and they've listed why, you can go to the Court of Chancery and deposit $500,000 or a trust and work with DENREC through the remediation and not have the lien placed on your property. So he gives someone who's trying to be responsible an opportunity to participate in the cleanup without having the property liened.
Or maybe if you're trying to sell it, you know, at the time, in that.
Or they could be rehabbing the property.
Yeah.
This also will now include damage that could occur from underground storage tanks. This was not really mentioned in the bill. The amendment puts that in. But don't forget, there are certain underground storage tanks exempted, as in the state code already. Agriculture, small home tanks, small domestic tanks, I believe it's tanks under 550 gallons, are allowed to be exempt if they're private use.
Used to be 1,000.
Well, it may be that, Mr. Wilson. It just says as per state code. I didn't go research the code. Okay. And an aggrieved person may appeal the lien to the Environmental Appeals Board. So there's your appeals process. That's now added into the bill.
That would be after you go to court?
A grieved person may appeal their lien to the Environmental Appeals Board.
Yes.
Who is that?
I don't know. I would imagine that's a board that's been set up by DENREC.
Now that's where I feel like we're getting in danger.
I know. That's not an appeal because there's...
Because we could say, I've got an underground tank, a diesel tank.
It's strictly for the tanks.
If they could come there and say, I've leaked so much fuel into the soil, and they're going to come and charge me thousands, literally $1,000 for a cleanup. Maybe the farm bill. We're kind of far-reaching here, I think, on that bill, as far as especially on environmental cleanups.
I'm just concerned that that's really not a independent appeals board.
Who's on that? How is it formed?
Well, according to Mr. Godwin, and maybe I better let him research it a little bit more.
I can read you what it says in the new bill. It says, a person whose interest is substantially affected by any action of the secretary taken pursuant to subsection A of this section may contest the imposition of a lien to the Environmental Appeals Board in accordance with 6008 of this title. So I would need to research.
That's free, though. That appeal doesn't, they don't have to pay. They would have to pay to go to court, is that right? On the other issue.
I'm sorry, but I don't have an in-depth analysis for you of how and who the Environmental Appeals Board is.
I would think it would not have a cost to it, but I don't know.
I would have to research that some more for you.
It consists of 7 Delawarean residents appointed by the governor with advice and consent of the Senate. I guess it is established away from DENREC, but almost seems like a different branch of government would be the right way to appeal it to the judiciary branch. But that to me is a concern, that there's not a judicial appeal process rather than all within the executive branch.
Okay. I can try to get some information back to you on that. I should warn you that House Bill 95, with its amendments, are item number 14 on today's Senate agenda.
You think it's going to go through?
I suspect it will, because this bill has gotten a lot of support. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's a popular bill, and it probably will pass.
Oh, it is popular as far as I'm concerned. I've got places that you take down houses, and they bring them over to this place, and they just dump all the materials.
DENREC told me that their main drive behind this was some abandoned gas stations. So that's why the tank thing came into it. Because I thought it was the Metchem property over in Newcastle, because there was a report from that problem back in 2003. It was a very polluted property.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I thought the bill was coming from there, but I'm told by the sponsors that it was really coming from an issue with abandoned gas stations.
It's a bad business to be in.
Okay, I'll do what I can on 95 for you to try and define those things.
Yeah, we used to have that.
House Bill number 135 is a bill we've been watching, and we're an opposed to that. This is the Sussex County Casino Bill. I've made the committee that it's been assigned to aware of your opposition, and the bill has been tabled in committee, and it has not moved since. And I really don't expect to see it acted on, because once a bill gets tabled in committee, they generally don't come out unless there's a real strong drive to bring them out, and I haven't seen that behind this bill. Senator,
they could also, maybe if we got that casino down, maybe we could get $8 million subsidy. Never know.
Wouldn't be enough.
I'm being a little facetious.
House Bill 137 has been assigned to the Senate Finance Committee. This is a bill that may have some bearing on our pension calculations. We've discussed it. We've also discussed the fact that it's rather vague as to exactly how it will affect us, because the numbers that are proposed in the bill versus our real numbers. So I don't think that bill is going to make it through this year. I might be wrong, but as again, it's in a committee, and the committee meetings have been canceled, so that doesn't look good. Mm-hmm. Next bill I want to talk with you about briefly is Senate Bill 78. This bill has passed the House with an amendment. It passed the Senate with an amendment, and it's been released from the House Natural Resources Committee, but it is not anywhere I can find. I can't find it on the ready list. I can't find it on an agenda. It's not on a hold list. So I'm not sure where this bill is at this point. I will do a little investigating today when I visit the Legislative Hall. This is the bill that sets up a Wetlands Advisory Committee and then gives a report to the General Assembly next year. The Aquaculture Bill, which is House Bill 160, passed the House. It was assigned to the Senate Natural Resources and Environmental Committee, and Mr. Cole asked me to ask some questions about this bill and how the leases might actually infringe on someone who lives near the water, having a dock for their boat or whatever. And I was told that, number one, there won't be any leases near the shoreline, and the leases that they're going to issue are very few. They're only going to represent like 10% of the total body of water, and they're in locations considerably out in the water that have most all been pre-identified. But Mr. Small assured me that if there were going to be any new lease locations established, they would first have public meetings and public access would be available, as you were concerned about.
Mm-hmm. No, just.
And how would they be advertised? Is this coming from the state?
Probably on the state website.
On the state, so you'd have to watch that type of thing.
Well, probably. I would think if they're going to have a lease discussion about an area that's close to a shoreline, that they would certainly also send notice like we do to all the neighbors close by.
I would hope that they do, but I wonder if they do.
I can't speak for them, but I would think.
I know.
Mm-hmm. One other bill that I hope to bring some clarity to for you is Senate Resolution Number 8. This bill has been it's been brought to us by Senator Venables, asking us to offer just a resolution of support, because that's really what the state Senate is doing, offering a resolution of support for what is currently in U.S. Congress, House Resolution 129. And this House resolution is, again, these are both resolutions, which are not law. They're recommendations. So the House Resolution 129 in the U.S. Congress would encourage other Congress members, other members of Congress, to support the Return to Prudent Banking Act, which is what this is called. It's essentially reestablishing the Grass-Steagall Act of 1933, which separated commercial banking from the more speculative markets. In 1933, when the Glass-Steagall Act was adopted, let's not forget what was going on in 1933. We had just come through a terrible depression. Unemployment was high. Our industrial infrastructure was working very slowly. And this act was put in place to stabilize the banking markets so the economy would grow under regulation, but more slowly and more securely. That law was repealed in 1999. And I know we can all remember what happened just a few years after that to our economy. We had the second depression. So there are those in Congress and in banking who believe that that measure that was removed was partially responsible for the crash of our economy. So what Senator Venables is requesting of us is simply for us to make a resolution that Sussex County Council would support Senate Resolution Number 8, which is a measure in the Delaware State Senate, which is simply a message of support over to Congress saying, yes, Delaware supports this action.
Everything I've read, it would be along those lines in support. It's only a resolution. Anyway.
Correct.
I'm not comfortable making that resolution. I don't understand the Glass-Steagall Act, so
okay. Don't
count on me.
Okay. So if you would like to make a resolution, I'll leave that to you. That is certainly.
Shame we didn't ask Mr. Venables to come today. I'm sure he would have.
I talked to Mr. Venables yesterday, and he explained to me what they were trying to accomplish and asked me to convey that to you.
Bank failures is what you're trying to prevent.
Yeah. Okay. A bill that just came on my radar screen, I was probably late getting this to you, and the reason I'm bringing it to you is this bill has the word farm in it. Anytime I see farm or agriculture, I try to make sure you know everything there is to know about this. House Bill 190, this bill would facilitate the growth of Delaware-licensed farm wineries. It also would regulate brew pubs, microbrews, and other craft distilleries by allowing them to expand their businesses within and outside the state, provided they continue to meet the production limitations set forth in the statute. As it affects farms, as I read through the bill, it certainly would allow a farmer to grow grapes, process them, ferment them, turn it into wine. Then he could bottle or barrel and sell the wine. He can also, in this bill, sell the wine not only by the barrel or by the bottle, but by the glass full, which now means he's serving it. I wanted you to know about that. It also says that, particularly in the first 3 years he's in business, he can import rather large quantities of product to supplement his supply. So it makes, in my opinion, it looks like it allows the farmer to sell more than just the wine he grew, at least for the first 3 years of operation. Thought you should be aware of it.
Kind of like a bar?
Well, it says he can serve by the glass.
Yeah.
Well, you go out, I guess when you're out in California and you go into one of those wineries and right. You go right onto the
Nassau, the
location, right. They've got setups nowadays, and it is just like a regular bar where they're serving liquor, and then right. They've expanded it so they can
run it year-round when they don't have their local crop or something.
I just thought you should be aware.
Sure.
That's why I put it in your package.
Yeah.
It's a farm bill. I wanted you to see it. Mr. Wilson also asked me last week to report on Senate Bill 97, the gender identity bill, and the report that I can give you is that this bill has been adopted by both chambers of the state legislature and signed into law by the governor on the 19th of this month, and I gave you a copy of the bill.
Sure.
Do we have any idea how that will affect us? Are we going to have to put in a third bathroom?
No, I don't think so. There was an amendment added to the bill to clarify the question that you have about bathroom usage. They go into a discussion in the amendment about facilities, public facilities where one might disrobe. And it simply clarifies that the person would go into whichever facility his identity identifies them with, and then they're not allowed to go into that facility for any inappropriate behavior. That's all it says.
That's good.
That's all it says.
And they should put a seat down.
So now we're going to hire bathroom police, right?
Thank you,
Make
Mr.
sure
Godwin.
That they obey their, that they act appropriately.
There you go.
That concludes my report. I'll be going to Dover today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and also on Sunday. And as soon as we get done with the legislature, I'll get right on the dog barking bill.
Yeah, give us a schedule of all your free time so we can fill it.
Right.
Yeah, we can.
Thank you, Mr.
No problem. Thank you very much.
John Ashman, EMS 106.